Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Welcome to another episode of You Had to Be There, the podcast where we deep dive into the world of the music industry. I'm your host, Julia Gomberg. I'm so thrilled to introduce this week's guest, Katie Garcia. Katie is the co-founder of Bayonet Records, which is an independent music label that she founded with her husband, Dustin Pacer, who also happens to front one of my all-time favorite bands, Beach Fossils. Katie has been such an inspiration to me since the early days of my career, and if I had to sum her up in one word, it would literally just be cool, but that barely scratches the surface. Be sure to check out Katie's curated playlist alongside this episode, which you can find in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening, and be sure to follow along on Instagram at the letter U had to be their pod, and I'll catch you next time.
Hi, I am Katie Garcia. I live in New York, and I run a record label called Bayonet Records.
I don't know how much you know, like, why I know who you are. I honestly was trying to remember. I've been like a big Beach Fossils fan for years. And then I was at some like vinyl, like record fair or something. And I ran into Dustin and you were there. And then I was like, oh my gosh, his wife is even cooler. And then since then, I was sort of stalking your career a bit. And so here we are.
I love that. Was it a record fair? Was it the one in like East River Park, like the record fair? Okay,
yep.
Cool.
Yeah. I don't remember how many years ago, but then we were on the same flight home from South By and I overheard her talking to someone and then I like recognized her and I was like, oh my gosh, are you Katie? So it all came full circle.
Yes, I remember that for sure.
Yeah,
I remember talking to you on that flight and that was so sweet. And it also was very funny and always not confusing, I guess, but I'm always like extra flattered because like Dustin gets recognized, you know, he's a front facing musician and right. I'm more on the industry side. So when someone comes up to me and is like, are you Katie Garcia of music industry Bayonet Records fame? I'm like, why? Yes. How the heck do you know who I am? I will gladly take the recognition.
Yeah.
So I'm very flattered and honored to be here today. And like I said before we started, I love to yap. So
I'm flattered as well. And yeah, this is really exciting. Can you kind of start off and talk a little bit about like what your relationship with music was like growing up?
Yes, I love talking about this. I mean, my relationship with music started at a very, very young age. I want to say I started my tape collection around when I was about 7. My uncles, who are actually my mom's like half brothers, so they always felt more like older brothers to me. Like they were in high school when I was like a kid. So I really looked up to them and they had really cool music taste. I remember like, I have so many vivid memories of going into their room when they were in high school and they had like a framed vinyl for the Stone Roses album cover, which was so cool. And they had a framed photo of them, which is like the one of the most, I need to find this photo. I need to get my uncle to send it to me, like send me a picture of it because it's such an iconic photo. It's the two of them. And like, mind you, they lived in Miami. They were skateboarders, super duper tan. It's the two of them with Robert Smith in the middle in
oh my
full,
gosh,
with like his full lipstick, pale crazy hair in Miami.
No way.
With like palm trees in the background. It's like, so it's perfect.
That's amazing.
So like I was always really fascinated with that. And then, you know, and I saw that they were really into cool music and I always had a curiosity about it, about a lot of the stuff they listened to. Mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly how old I was, but I think it was like between the ages of like 7 and 10, I started getting, you know, like earning money for allowances. And I remember going to the record store and buying my first couple of CDs, and it was, Oasis, What's the Story, Morning Glory.
Nice.
Smashing Pumpkins, Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness, and Alanis Morissette, Jagged Little Pill.
Wow.
And the rest is herstory. And I still love all three of those records.
That's very sophisticated for that age.
I know, honestly, like, you know, now as an adult, my parents got divorced when I was 8, I want to say. So I was like, you know, I was going through some things.
For sure. Yeah.
And so I think that, like, and I really mean this, I think that music was just this amazing outlet for me and this place for me to turn to and feel my feelings at a time when, you know, my life as I knew it was in this like big transitional period. Even as a kid, I would read the liner notes of like CDs, and I was always so fascinated with labels and the names of the musicians and the lyrics. And yeah, I was just such a fan, and that always stayed with me through college and, you know, obviously still through to today. It's literally my life. But yeah, but then eventually when I got older and after I graduated college, even though I studied film and I was working for a set designer, but we were doing a lot of sets for MTV at the time. So I realized that the reason I liked it was its proximity to music and not necessarily the carpentry and set painting part of it.
Right.
So then I was like, well, I should just do this. And I started emailing labels asking if they needed interns. And yeah, and then I got an internship at Capture Tracks.
Wow. Yeah, and the rest, like you said, is herstory.
The rest is herstory.
I think it's also, I was just talking to someone else about internships recently and how different the scope of like what it was like to get an internship. More recently, I think it's become a lot more like rigid and like technical, and like you have to go through a really big process, whereas like years ago, or not even that long ago, like you would literally just like email people. Like, how did you come across your internship?
Yeah, I mean, I exactly what you said. I emailed a bunch of labels I really liked that were based in New York. My roommate at the time, Connor, had actually gone to Capture Tracks to see if they needed interns and came back with a stack of records.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, whoa. I was like, this label puts out some cool stuff that I like. I was like, I wasn't even super familiar with this label. And they had only been around for about a year at that point. But I was like, oh, this is cool. And then, and he didn't end up interning there. The girl who was the label manager at the time, she interviewed me and then asked me, she clearly was like very busy and like very overwhelmed and needed help desperately. So she asked if I could start on the spot. So I
was
like, sure.
Right.
So I just stayed the rest of the day, like helping her pack orders. And yeah. And then about 6 months later, she decided she wanted to move back home to Detroit. And by that point, I'd also already been begging Mike, the owner, to give me a job. And so it was just like the right place, right time kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then he was like, you want to be label manager? So I was like,
wow. That's amazing. It wouldn't have happened if you weren't, you know, advocating for yourself so much. So that's always really cool to hear when that kind of happens. Like timing is, I think, a big part of it, but I also think, and maybe I'm like a little woo woo about it, but like, I think things happen for reasons and like align, you know, when the opportunity is right for you. So that's really cool.
Totally. Yeah, I agree. I'm a little woo woo on that one too, for sure.
Yeah, this is a woo woo positive podcast.
Yes.
Do what you will with that, listeners. But for people who are not like super familiar, you know, with labels, and maybe they know like the big ones, like, can you kind of explain to someone what a smaller scale label does day to day?
Yeah, I mean, I love a small independent label. Also, just as a side note, I also feel a piece of advice I always give people who are wanting to get into the music industry is I often encourage them to start out getting, trying to get an internship at a smaller label, because I feel like you get to see how everything is done in such a hands-on way that I think at like a major label or even a bigger indie, you kind of get like siloed, you know, helping out like one person who's like in one specific department. Whereas at a smaller label, you know, it's usually just like anywhere from like 1 to 5 people working there, and you do everything. From, you know, finding the art, scouting the artists, doing the A&R, helping them develop on a creative level, helping grow their careers, planning out the marketing plan, putting the records into production.
Everything.
A little bit of everything. And it's a great way to learn. And I've really enjoyed, now that I've, for the last year, I've solely been working at Bayonet, my own label. And I've loved it. And I missed like being able to have a hand in a little bit of everything.
Yeah, that's really impressive too. I mean, that, to your point, like that should be what an internship is, right? Like the opportunity to kind of dip your toes into like everything to see what you like and not like. And I think there's this misconception that when you go into music, like you have to know exactly what you want to do, but it's like, how can you know what you want to do if you're not given the opportunity to like see and experience those all these things that you may not even know exist. So yeah. I totally agree with that. And I'm very pro small independent labels too.
So then, I interned at Captured, then became the label manager there for 4 years. And then at the end of the 4 years, it just felt like a natural time to move on. My husband, Dustin, who is in Beach Fossils, who was on the label at the time, his contract was up with Captured, and I also just felt like it was time to make a change. He had been wanting to start a label of his own since he was a kid. And obviously, like, I had the label experience of how to run a label. So we just said, okay, let's do this together. And we decided we were going to start Bayonet. And then we reached out to Darius, who's one of the owners of Secretly Group, to see if Secretly would distribute our label to, you know, small independent record stores and distribute it digitally and everything. And he said yes, but then he also said, well, what are you doing for work, like while you're setting up the label? Which was a great question, because I hadn't even thought about that. I was like, oh yeah, our company is like not going to be making money for the first year. We're just putting everything into production. I was like, oh, I don't know, actually. This is a great question. And he was like, well, if you're interested, we would love to have you do part-time A&R for Secretly Group. At the time, they didn't really have like technically an A&R department. It was mostly just the four owners of the label group who would do A&R. But as the company continued to grow, they just had like less and less time to be super tapped in and and really involved on that creative front, and needed a bigger team. And so, yeah, so that's kind of where I came in. So I started doing part-time A&R at Secretly Group at the same time that we were in the process of setting up Bayonet.
Wow.
Eventually, you know, two things kind of happened at once, which was Bayonet continued to grow. We put out the Frankie Cosmos record, Next Thing, that did really, really well and was kind of the record that put our label on the map in a lot of ways.
Wow.
And so that happened on one hand. And then on the other hand, at Secretly, I had signed Japanese Breakfast, and then after that, Phoebe Bridgers, and both of them started doing really well. Just felt like they also needed more of my time. So then Bayonet was kind of starting to get to a point where I could hire a label manager. So I hired a label manager to look after Bayonet, but I was still very much, you know, tapped in with Bayonet. But then eventually I went full time at Secretly doing A&R there. So I was kind of doing both in tandem. It felt like having two full-time jobs.
Yeah.
But I made it
basically
work.
Basically was. Yeah.
But I made it work. And then, yeah. And then I was at Secretly for 8 years and I got approached by Arjun Pulajal, who was the president of Capital at the time, wow, to come do A&R for them.
Wow.
And at first I was like, no way. I was like, I'm never working at a major. I was like, hell no.
Right.
But I got to know him and Michelle, who was the CEO at the time, Michelle Jubilier. Mm. And I just really liked them. And I could tell that they genuinely cared about good music and had good taste. Mm. I told them what my concerns were. And I told them what I would need in order to, I needed to make sure that I would have the time to develop these artists, because right, a lot of the artists that they were like pointing to as like, oh, because you worked with this person, they were so successful and whatever. And I was like, yeah, but like it took, you know, 2 or 3 albums to get there. These weren't, right, you know, necessarily overnight successes, quote unquote.
Right.
So, and yeah, and they were like, we totally get that and we want to give you that freedom. Mm. They made me an offer I just felt like I couldn't say no to. So yeah, they asked me if I wanted to be vice president of A&R for Capital.
Wow.
I said yes. And it was a really tough decision because I had also just gotten promoted at Secretly to be head of A&R for the publishing company.
Oh, wow.
So it was, I think ultimately I did the right thing. And because I learned so much at Capital, and it gave me just such a different perspective on the music industry. And the knowledge I gained there is not something I could have just like read in a book.
Right.
So I think it was a really, really great experience. And, but yeah, but then now for the last year, I've just solely been doing Bayonet, my own label, which is full circle because that's kind of what I wanted to do.
Yeah. That's so
it was
cool.
Never my intention to have these side quests. Yeah. But they were side quests I felt I couldn't say no to.
For sure. And what an interesting like position to be in, to have a really big label come to you and like see what you've done and be like, we want you. I just feel like I don't get to hear a lot of those stories, you know, where that's just like really, for lack of better word, badass. Like I just think there's something about, especially as like a female in music, it's really, really inspiring to hear that. And I mean, your work speaks for yourself clearly in that, and it worked out. What was it like? Yeah, like early on, I guess, like, I'm just going to be biased as a big Japanese Breakfast fan. What was it like in terms of like the artist development and her career? Like, what was sort of the trajectory of her success when you were working with her?
Oh, that's a really good question. I found Michelle's music just on Pitchfork. They had posted a song from Psychopomp, and I just fell in love with the song. And it was so just charming, and I don't know, it had this like lightness and this energy to it that I really liked. It was so, yeah, I could just tell that there was something there.
Yeah.
And then I met up with her, and she coincidentally happened to live in Greenpoint.
Oh, and,
yeah, which is where I also lived. And then, and it's also where the Secretly office used to be.
Oh, so
we met up for lunch like a block away from the office. And then we ended up talking for like 3 hours, no joke.
Wow.
And I don't know. Yeah. I just really, from the beginning, you just kind of, you know, people will say like star quality or right. I don't know, you know, and it was just, we just had this like really natural connection, and I could see, her drive and her ambition. We all went to South by Southwest that year, and she was playing, and that was where I kind of got everybody on board with signing her. Mm. Like the whole team got to meet her. She played at the Secretly showcase that year. We did karaoke together.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I also like helped, convince her now amazing booking agent to work with her. Cause he was like, I'm thinking about it. And like, he saw her live and spent time with her. And I was like, "Tell me how to do it." And he was like, "Yeah, I think I'm going to do it."
So cool.
Yeah. It was such a fun like trip. And, and then we came back from that. We partnered with Yellow K, the label who had originally put out Psycho Pomp, and kind of re-released it as a co-release. It was just like every record, like from Psycho Pomp to Soft Sounds to Jubilee, like every record was just like brick by brick, growing the project, continuing to play bigger venues, do more interviews. She was touring like crazy, opening for the right artists. I remember she went on tour with Slow Dive, which was so cool.
Wow.
She opened for Mitski, who was also like on the rise, but like at a slightly like bigger place in her career.
Right.
Yeah. And then I think when Jubilee and Crying at H Mart came out at the same time, there was like this perfect storm of both things just being so, so well received. And we really tried to cross-pollinate that hype and that momentum to keep pushing her forward, and it worked. And now she's an international superstar.
Yeah, really. She is.
And I'm so proud of her, and she's just the coolest, sweetest person, and no one is like more deserving of success than she is.
I love that. It also like makes sense that you guys clicked so well, because I like think both of you are so cool. So it makes sense to me that you would hit it off.
Well, thank you. Thanks. Yeah, we definitely did.
And it's also like, it's cool to hear, like, I don't know, I'm sure you're 100% this type of person where it's like, growing up, I always wanted to be that friend that tells my friends first about like an artist that I think is really going to make it, and to be able to do it on a scale where you're actually making her career, like that must be such another level of like just feeling really good.
Definitely. Definitely.
That's amazing. And I know you mentioned like you were at Captured Track when Dustin was. Is that how you guys met?
Yeah, that's how we met. I was an intern, and he was coming to pick up a box of the very first piece of music he put out as Beach Fossils. It was the Daydream 7-inch, and he came to the office to pick it up, and I gave him the box, and that was the first time I met him, and I hadn't even like listened to his music yet.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
And because I was also still so new to Captured that I was getting to know the roster, and even at that point, like, the label was really prolific. They had put out like a ton of stuff already. So I remember like meeting Dustin, and then we met, and then he like added me on Facebook. And then I invited him to like go to a show or to hang. I was like, "Oh, just like, what are you up to?" And we ended up going to a show together. But before I even went, I was like, "Hold up, I got to listen to this guy's music, because right. sucks. Like, I can't do this."
I was thinking that. I was like, "Oh no, like, what if it was like bad?" Obviously, it's not.
But I listened to it, and I was like, okay. I was like, I can work with this. I like this.
Yeah.
And then we ended up going on a date, and now we're married. And we have a child.
And you have a child. That's like, seriously. So I keep saying cool, but like, because it is cool. It's just like, what a dream. And yeah, I was going to say, like, not to mention like you guys, you made your own label, and you had a child, and now he tours a lot. He's like in Asia right now. Is that correct?
Yeah. He just finished the Asia part of the tour, but yeah, they're opening for Slow Dive in Australia.
That's amazing. And how is that? Like, how is balancing a family, with a daughter, you being a music exec, and then a touring musician?
Yeah. It's tough. Yeah. I mean, my in-laws are here right now, which is like, which is amazing, which has been a massive, massive, massive help. When Dustin goes on tour, I'll usually reach out to either my parents or his parents to see if it's an extended amount of time. Like, if it's 2 weeks or honestly, even 3 weeks, like I'm probably okay on my own. But if it's anything longer than a month, yeah, it's like, it's tough. And it's like, it's also given me so much respect for single parents. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to parent by yourself, and to work and get them ready for school and
oh my
everything.
Gosh, yeah.
So we have our ways of, and we have our community here too. Luckily, my husband's sister lives here, my sister-in-law, and we're really close with her, and she is super close with our daughter. So, you know, she's also always here to help. And we also have his cousin Juliet lives here, and his
cousin Tommy,
and his cousin Chloe. So like we have like a pretty big like family unit here, which is nice.
Yeah.
It definitely will like help when we ask for help. So it's cool. So, you know, I think basically the moral of the story is like, it definitely takes a village, and it involves asking for help when we need it. That's how we make it work. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that is so important. Like asking for help, no matter what the capacity is a huge part of being successful, honestly, and not losing your mind.
It's huge. And I used to be kind of, I used to always like feel bad asking for help. But then my therapist told me once, when you allow people to help you, you allow them to show you how much they love you. And like, I feel like I think about that all the time now. It's something that's like really, really stayed with me.
Yeah.
And I try to, you know, in a way do that for the musicians on my label. I try to help them.
Right. Right.
And help them in their careers in a totally different way and show them that we, you know, I care about them and I care about their music and the longevity of what they're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's huge. That's like not, I don't think every, especially at bigger labels, just from my own experience, like that isn't always the case. And I think it really makes a difference. You can tell whether the artist consciously knows it or not. Like there's just, when someone really has your back, like it really makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
And also like total side personal note, I relate to that. I'm having trouble asking for help. Like I tore my ACL last summer biking in Greenpoint, actually.
Oh,
so like
potholes.
Exactly. That's literally what happened. Yep. But like, yeah, having to ask for help for the first time because I like physically couldn't do things, I think was huge for me. Like, and now it's really translated into just so many aspects of my life. I'm just like, has so much to do with just advocating for yourself also, I think.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
So in terms of like the music scene, were you out and about seeing shows like while living in Greenpoint? Like, how would you like discover new music, I guess?
Yeah. Definitely going to shows, getting demos, finding things. Well, early on, this is going to age me like crazy, but early on, honestly, MySpace.
You're not the first guest to mention MySpace.
Okay. Cool. You know, yeah. So yeah, when I was at Captured, and even just like before I was even working in the music industry, when I was just like a person who liked new music, you know, I feel like I would go to different artists' MySpaces and look at the other artists that they had in their top eight.
Oh.
So I would just say like, oh, okay, if I like this artist, I'm probably going to like the other artists that they're recommending.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, which is funny because it's actually the very, very first artist I ever signed was Widow's Peak. And that's kind of how we ended up working with them, as they were in Kevin Morby's top eight on MySpace.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, whoa, I was like, this is cool. What is this?
Also so interesting because this is like pre-algorithm. This is like the real organic way of like, you know, it's interesting.
Yes. And then, yeah, and then we ended up signing Widow's Peak to Captured, and they're still working together, which is awesome.
That's amazing.
They're Molly and Rob are super sweet, really talented people. And Yeah. So MySpace was early on like music discovery tool, I guess. And then I don't know. It's like, it's such a mix now. I would say we get demos sent to us through our email that we definitely like comb through from time to time. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more volume of them now. So it's harder to keep up with, but we try our best. You know, having a friend recommend something to me, someone whose taste I trust.
Right.
Seeing an opener at a show mm-hmm. that you just kind of keep, you know, have your eye on. Getting managers will send us stuff. Lawyers will send us stuff. Randomly finding something on Spotify. Actually, yep. That's actually how I came across Yule.
Oh,
it was in my Discover Weekly.
Oh, there you go. I guess the algorithm is
not
good.
To be like a corporate shill for Spotify. Because, you know, I have my issues with them too. Don't get me wrong, but. Yeah, but that is actually how I found Yule. I was listening to my Discover Weekly and I was just like, whoa, what is this? Huh. And then we reached out and then we signed Yule. And it was
cool.
A really important artist for Bayonet and for the label. So it's always such a mix. It is basically my answer.
It is.
It starts out one way, like on the, you know, it's still kind of organic now, you know, it's just different. It's just recommendations from lawyers, managers, friends, booking agents who are like, hey, I started working with this band. I think they're cool. Check it out.
Right. And then determining like what you want to kind of pursue or explore further. It sounds like a lot of based on intuition and just having good taste, I think too helps. But yeah, but like even when you were saying like with an opener, I think that's an underrated mention because that's always something I like kind of pay attention to. And I'm at a show, I like to go to the opener and just see like, it's so telling of like how the crowd responds to openers a lot. And sometimes it's so like, you're just so surprised by like the crowd that they pull. And then you're like, oh, well, I wonder then like, you know, a month later they have their own tour and it's like, it's just cool to see it from that organic perspective.
Yeah.
And then I guess you kind of talked about this a little bit, but in terms of just like doing so much beyond like asking for help, like where are those moments in your life? Like you find balance or like have that moment of like grounding yourself a bit.
Like how so? Just free time?
Yeah, it could be. Or like maybe there's like a song you listen to or like something that kind of just like reminds you of like, this is the journey that I came from in a way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are definitely certain songs or certain things that just remind me of home and Miami where I grew up and I'm Cuban. So I feel like anytime I hear Cuban music or salsa or like Celia Cruz is a big one for me. And I think most Cubans, even actually Dustin is also Cuban and his grandfather has an incredible salsa band.
Wow.
Yeah. And so stuff like that is just, it's just like soul nurturing to me.
Yeah.
It's like there's just this pull that feels like almost innate, but I love that. I love listening to that.
Yeah. And an amazing connection that is even further for you and Dustin. I love that.
Yeah. No, I know. It's crazy when I found out he was also Cuban. Yeah, I was like, you crazy. Gotta be kidding me. Especially because I grew up in Miami where every second or third person is Cuban. There's such a big Cuban community there. And so it was funny that, I come to New York. I'm like, connect with this like indie musician. And then we go to a show and I'm, you know, it's a show. So there's like a ton of other people there and I'm there with my friend, Renee. I introduce Renee to Dustin and I'm like, and I'm introducing Dustin to Renee. And I'm like, oh, Dustin, like, this is like my homie Renee. And he's Cuban also. And he's also from Miami, just like me. And like, you know, we go back and Dustin was like, yeah, I'm Cuban too. And Renee like, what the fuck? Like, we were like, what the,
Wild.
And so it was so funny. And it is really nice to have that cultural connection because like I don't have to explain to him like what tostones are,
or, right?
You know, like he already knows. Like he grew up eating the same food that I did.
So it's like a piece of home.
It is like a piece of home. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, being with Dustin feels like home.
Oh, that's so sweet. I love that. Two people I admire so much. I'm like, oh, that's so nice to hear. in terms of also, like, I'm just thinking about like culture and identity, being a woman in music, like what has your experience been with that? I know that's kind of a vague question, but like anything, I don't know, any challenges or anything that you've felt has like shaped your world in music?
Yeah, the music industry, I think it's no secret that it is a male dominated industry. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to give like one specific example, yeah, but I've definitely had instances throughout my career where I've really had to going back to like advocating for yourself. Mm. I've really had to not only advocate for myself, but just like advocate for my artists and, you know, yeah, and by certain decisions that I think are going to benefit the artists in the long term. I think being a woman in the industry, sometimes it can be easy for people to write you off or mm-hmm. be like, yeah, whatever. Right. So, you know, so I feel like I will say I did experience this more earlier on in my career in music. Mm-hmm. Especially since I was someone who didn't have like things to point to at the time, but look, I did these things, so you can right. trust me. Whereas like now I have like a bit, you know, people may know who I am or like know the things I've worked
right.
on and they might be more open to listening to my ideas, but it shouldn't take that for people to take your ideas seriously. Even at Bayonet, like we, our interns have been super involved in all of our campaigns. Mm-hmm. And we ask them to sit in on our weekly meetings. We ask them to give any ideas that they have in terms of, you know, marketing, where we want to hear their ideas and we want to implement them. And we have. And
amazing.
I also think I have, since because I was in their same exact position.
Right.
I know exactly what that's like. I know what it's like to come up in the industry. And so I try my best to help people in those same positions because I know what it's like. And I know what it's like to kind of, yeah, feel like you're not being heard. And that sucks. So yeah, I have for sure experienced had some not great experiences
in
dealing with a lot of shitty men for sure.
yeah which I that's like always comes up in when I interview like women in music, and I always like, you know, can want to counter with saying like, no, it's not all men, obviously you're
not
married to a man
for
and
sure.
a
not all men but you know yeah it's
yeah
it's, still, and it has, you know, I will say it's gotten better.
Yeah.
But it's still there and it still exists. And,
for sure. And I think it kind of speaks to a larger, like more generalized issue. Like gatekeeping is such a thing in this industry. So I love that, like, you're kind of shattering that. Like, because like, what is the point? Like, it's just to make someone feel superior, I guess, in a sense. But from my experience, I think there is this, like, from a label I worked at, like a men's club, in a sense of like, oh, like we don't know what's going on inside that room. And like, that shouldn't, if we're all working for the same goal, like what does, that's so counterproductive. It doesn't make sense to me. And yeah. I personally am a big proponent of like equal opportunity, whatever that, you know, however that applies to whatever situation.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And I think it's cool too that you like signed so many female artists. I think is that intentional or is that just like how you were kind of what you were drawn to?
It's funny, like our roster is definitely like mostly like femme or like honestly a lot of trans artists too on our roster. So we don't have a lot of just like regular dudes. and it's really just, it just happened to be that way, you know, like we obviously want to have a very diverse roster. That's something we think about a lot. But ultimately, it comes down to whose music we like and who we connect with as a, you know, as a person, and whose vision we feel like we would be really compatible with.
Yeah, so, no, that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily, yeah, you're like open-minded about it. And I think mm-hmm. that's amazing, though. I want to like keep looking at the roster more. I'm like now curious.
Yeah.
Do you have any goals or things that you're hoping for Bayonet, like in the future as you continue?
Yes, I want to keep growing the company. Mm-hmm. I think the label right now is in a really exciting phase. We have a lot of really, really promising artists on the label with so much potential for growth. Mm-hmm. So I just want to keep pushing that forward and figuring out ways and, you know, whether it's through like partnership of some kind or funding. And, you know, I'm kind of like looking into any and all options right now. Mm-hmm. But I think just like growing the label in the best way that I can. I've been really like careful with it because I don't want to make the wrong move. But
right.
Yeah, I think that's like the next step. The next step is to keep growing the label. I want our artists to be nominated for Grammys.
Yeah.
Our label to be competing with bigger indies for the same artists. I want to, just like show people that we have the team and the capacity to develop artists and to really take them to the next level. So those are kind of my future goals.
Those are great ones. And I'm excited for what's to come. It's like, it's an exciting time. I mean, it always sounds like an exciting time for you, to be honest, but, but I love that this is like yours, you know?
Yeah, I do too. And it's been great. And yeah. And I definitely am super grateful to the whole staff of Bayonet, Evan, who's the label manager, and Sam, who's head of marketing, and Liza, who's the warehouse manager. Mm-hmm. Are all just so, so good at what they do. I feel so confident in their abilities. And I just feel really grateful to work with all of them. Because we all really, really care about what we're doing. And I think that's super important when anywhere, really. It's like you want people to care about what they're doing. So
definitely.
Yeah.
It just sounds exciting, like a really inspiring environment to be in. What piece of advice would you give to someone trying to sort of like figure out what they want to do in this industry?
Definitely starting out trying to either get an entry level position, or I mean, there's not even that entry level position at a small indie label doesn't really exist. It's just a position at a small indie label, or getting an internship at a smaller indie label, just because I feel like you will get the best bird's eye view of how everything at a label operates versus starting out at a bigger company. I think it just gives you so much more perspective. And, you know, in order to do your job the best, you know, once you do move on to, let's say, like a bigger company, you need to know what to expect of the other people on your team and what their roles are supposed to be, like,
right,
in order to hold them accountable and make sure that everybody's doing the best they can do. And so that's why I always recommend for people to do that. And then also like working at a smaller label or interning at a smaller label will give you the chance to figure out what it is you want to do.
Right.
You know, if you really enjoy doing marketing or socials, or, you know, being the person that ties everything together, puts things into production, has that kind of front-facing relationship with the management, you know, or doing more logistical minded things, right, and coming up with like cool creative packaging ideas, or, you know, I think having that time to explore all of the different avenues you can go down, right, is a great place to start.
Yeah, super well said. And I think, not to be like negative, but I think it's also a good way to figure out what you don't want to do too, you know?
Oh, totally.
Yeah. Yeah. You can immediately like, that's so important too, because you don't want to end up like thinking you got your dream job and then you're doing social media and you're like, wow, this sucks. I hate this.
Yeah. But, oh no, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's really great advice. Really inspiring. Well, awesome. I'm going to end the episode with a question that I like to ask everyone. If you had to create an album title for your music career so far, what would you name it?
Oh, this is okay. Hold on. Maybe something like Caregiver, because I care and I give a lot of my time to those I care about, including the musicians I work with.
Yeah, I think that's perfect.
Yeah. And also just in my life, in my actual regular life, you know, as a mom, I do have a strong maternal instinct that I've had even before I had my daughter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like even the artists that I didn't end up signing, a lot of them I end up becoming good friends with. So like Shamir and Lindsay from Snail Mail used to call me and Dustin mom and dad. We were kind of like this, like all of the like younger musicians, like parental figures in a way.
I can see that for sure. I love that. I also was at one of those shows that were Snail Mail open for Beach Fossils, I think. So
yes.
Yeah, it was really good.
I love Lindsay so much. Yeah.
It's awesome to hear. Yeah, I'm a big fan of hers. Well, I love that. And I think you just seem like a really caring and passionate person in like in everything you do, which is, it's not always like easy to find. And I think that speaks to your success on so many levels.
Thank you.
And it also just sounds like a cool like album that I would read about on Pitchfork, to be honest. Yeah.
I wonder if somebody, I'm sure somebody's had
out there.
Yeah. I'm so curious. Caregiver.
Yeah, I'm curious too now.
Oh yeah, there's a couple songs, but album.
Album, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
Interesting.
All right, keep that in your back pocket.
Keep that in my back pocket. Maybe when I make music of my own.
Yeah. Do you ever make your own music?
I have a little bit. It's been a while. And it's very, very like lo-fi. It's kind of like, I feel like anytime I end up playing music on my own, and also I'm like, when I say play music, quote, I put it in quotes because I'm like also still learning how to even like, I've been trying to learn how to play bass.
Cool.
So, but it's funny because every time I try to come up with a bass line, it's like always kind of gothy. So it's like, I feel like inadvertently, but then it's also like kind of messy in this way because I am not, you know, I'm still learning.
Right.
So it lands somewhere. It's like, it's kind of like gothy beat happening or something, or gothy, like something that would have been on like K Records in the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But I've only like have like a handful of songs. I did a couple songs with my friend Donna and my other friend AK. And then, yeah. And then I've like sung backup on quite a few Beach Fossils songs. I have a Discogs page. I got a Discogs page.
Oh my God.
Credits to my name.
I got to check this out. Which songs were you on?
Oh my God. I don't even remember now. mostly on Clash the Truth. Which songs? Oh yeah. 4 credits on Clash the Truth.
Wow.
I have other like non-singing credits. Like, you know, I'm listed as like an A&R for Matt Rogers' record I worked on, his Christmas album. And then I'm also listed as a producer for the Tranza compilation that I worked with on through Red Hot, which came out last year.
Oh, that's so cool.
So that's on there too. I didn't even realize that had gotten added to my page, but kudos to whoever on Discogs put that up there for me, because
they're on top of it. Damn,
they're on it. It's really funny.
Well, maybe someday, you know, your new album that you titled will come out on there.
I know, finally put some. Yeah, I've been toying. It's Bayonet's 10-year anniversary this year, actually.
And oh wow, congrats!
Thank you. We're doing a bunch of stuff towards the end of the year. We're doing like 3 different shows. We're going to do a cassette tape that has a bunch of like demos from artists on the roster. Yeah, we're going to put this cassette tape out for the 10-year anniversary, and we'll have it for sale at the 10-year shows, and we'll have it for sale online.
Oh, amazing.
One of the things I was toying with, because a few people have asked me to put out this song. I wrote a song with Dustin for my sister when she turned 18. That's just called the year 18. And the song is like, it's so short. It's like not barely like 2 minutes long, and it just eats the same thing over and over again. But I've been thinking about like, maybe I should put that on the 10-year comp. Just funny.
Yeah.
So maybe that'll get thrown on there. We'll see.
I love that. I'm going to keep my eye open for all of that. I want to attend a show or whatever I can do. That sounds great.
Yeah, I'll email you like after this with like more details. It's going to be really fun.
Well, thank you so much. This was awesome. Like, congratulations on all your success. And I think one thing that people often don't do enough, like in this industry, is like take a moment to really recognize their wins, because you're always kind of on to the next thing. And so like, I always try to make that sort of the goal with this podcast, to really just like give my guests like the time to reflect. And I found it really inspiring. So thank you for sharing.
Oh my gosh. No, this was inspiring to me. Thank you so much for having me. And it was great chatting with you. I'm happy to chat anytime. And yeah, thanks so much. Depths unseen lets me know that it's all right.